Welcome to St. Mark's Cathedral Conversations, a podcast featuring members of the St. Mark's Cathedral community in Seattle, Washington. These interviews feature lives of faith and adventure, service and connection. Here's our host, Michael Pereira.
I'm sitting here with Elliot Jacks. And Elliot, before we begin, tell us where exactly we are sitting.
Well, we're sitting in St. Mark's Cathedral in the choir loft and the organ loft.
Some of the people I've interviewed for this podcast, they've been here for decades of their lives. I mean, sometimes longer than I've been alive, which is an amazing concept to think about. How long have you been coming to St. Mark's?
I've been coming since last Advent. First week in December is the first time I came.
So in many ways, you've been here for a while. There's a lot that you've done, but this is still a fairly new and developing experience for you.
I'm a newbie still, yes.
So tell us a little bit about that. I mean, before we get to St. Mark's, tell us about, you're not native to Seattle, I know that much, but tell us about where you came from and then how this Episcopal thing started for you.
Mm-hmm. So my dad was in the Coast Guard, and so I was raised with a military life, moving every 2 to 3 years or so. And so, I'm not from any particular place. When my dad retired, we lived in Alaska. And so I'm from Ketchikan, Alaska, and I've lived there for 15 years as he was leaving the Coast Guard and as he retired. And then I went to university there, and then I moved down here to find a reasonable job.
What was life like in Ketchikan, Alaska?
Very rainy and very windy. It rains.
So this is nothing new for you.
Oh no! Well, in fact, I frequently complain of how little it rains in Seattle relative to what I'm used to. So,
how did your interest in the Episcopal Church or in church life general get started for you?
Sure. So church life for me really started in earnest when I was 10, and as we would say in the church I used to belong to, professed or sort of they did baptism after sort of confirmation, so to speak, right? So I confirmed myself at 11, and I was a very devout conservative Christian for a really long time. But I also have always had a pretty probing analytical mind. And the more that I researched and learned about science and the world around us, the less and less of the Bible that I could take strictly literally. And that led me to biblical studies of my own to really see, well, what is reasonably true out of scriptures, and how were they even written, what are they all about? And after a long period of time, about 10 years or so, I found that I could not participate in the church in the same capacity that I had, because I felt like I just didn't believe the same things that everybody else in the church did. And so I left, and then pretty quickly after that became atheist because of I'd done enough biblical research that my faith was really shaken, I guess, is the best way to put it. And so I spent a few years as an atheist, and after a couple of years, I realized that in all the meaningful ways, I was still Christian. I still believed in a certain, I still had faith that God would answer prayers if he did exist, right? And, the thing that always kept coming back for me was how meaningful communion was. We didn't have a Eucharist in that church. We had a communal notion, so it was an emblematical as opposed to like a transubstantiation or consubstantiation or whatever, right? So and that always hit me as being very important to my experience. And so after a few years so I identified as Christian for a couple of years after being an atheist for a couple of years, and then as I was sort of a mystic Christian sitting alone, contemplating the mysteries of God, I realized that, a real key important part of Episcopal worship is corporal worship. And so that became important to me too, worshiping with a community as opposed to alone, to kind of help me think through these things. And The issue is, of course, like when you're I don't really like church services where there's like guitars, so to speak. Not knocking them. I mean, my sister goes to one of these churches and they're very, very good, but it's not really for me. And so I needed a church that took its worship kind of seriously, solemnly, but at the same time had the space for me to puzzle out God and scripture and all of these things where I wouldn't feel like a heretic every other minute, you know? So the Episcopal Church was kind of a natural choice because I'd known some people growing up that were Episcopalian and they always were on an even keel and whatnot. So.
I like that idea of a tagline, the Episcopal Church where you won't feel like a heretic.
Exactly.
How did St. Mark's come up on your radar?
Yeah, so I was mentioning to my to a friend of mine that I was considering visiting an Episcopal church because I'd never been to a liturgical service of any kind, not Lutheran, not Catholic, nothing, right? And so I was like, well, let me check this out. And he knew, the friend of mine knew, that I was really into choir and opera and these sorts of things. And so he's like, well, you might consider St. Mark's because they have a really, really good organ. And so I wandered in December, first week of December, and sat down for the 11 o'clock service. And sure enough, they had a fabulous organ. But what really struck me that first time was the cathedral choir. They were singing hymns that were like my favorite hymns, right?
Wow.
Well, hymns that I thought that I'd have to go all the way to England to hear, you know, in person, right? In a real church, you know, and I didn't realize there was a tradition of this sort of thing, you know, right in my backyard, so to speak. So after that, I went over and I asked one of the purple robey guys wandering around the choir people, and it happened to be Michael Kleinschmidt, the director of music, and I said,
purple robey guy.
Correct, yeah, the guy. And I asked him, how can I join a choir? And he's like, let me tell you. that the next week, I was in the St. Mark Singers, the 9 o'clock choir, and I've been showing up to that choir ever since.
So that was, I mean, literally your first time at St. Mark's. You had this connection to the music. Why was it so important for you to sing at the 9 o'clock choir, not just to enjoy the music, as it were?
Singing for me is really important. I grew up and my mom and dad both were singers and they played guitar and so it wasn't just a part of my church life, but it was also part of my family life, and I've been in choirs since I was a little kid, and remained throughout my adulthood. And but in my small church in Ketchikan, everybody if they didn't know how to sing, they knew how to, if they didn't know how like to read music or sing like professionally, so to speak, they knew how to sing pretty well. And so there was about 12 people and we would have some pretty good like 1860s harmonies going on, right? Like, you know, it's sort of like what you'd expect sort of pioneers on the prairie to be singing, so to speak. And so there's a lot of beauty to be had both in hearing music but also in participating too. And you can really get to a transcendent experience through that.
You mentioned you had never been in a church, in a liturgical-based church, before coming to St. Mark's. Again, why was liturgy important? Why was it something you sought out?
It was something I sought out because I just had never seen it before, right? So the church that I was a part of is what could be called a restorationist church. So a church that felt that everybody since the Catholics had been doing it wrong and just returned to the basics. So no tradition. You know, we hear about the Episcopal stool, which is scripture, reason, and tradition, and they said no tradition ever, period, right? And so I had been intrigued by the notion of tradition and by the notion of liturgy for a little while because of the studies that I had been doing. It was becoming more important to me. Rituals, like I realized ritual has an important place in my life as I continued to start a career and developing personal rituals of my own. How that can kind of help free your sort of mind and your person from thinking about what you're doing to sort of thinking about what that means to you, or it's kind of a way to I don't know how to put it, but hold yourself up, so to speak.
Okay, you
know?
That makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
I've heard people refer to liturgy almost as a scaffolding that helps us climb, get closer to God in some ways. And so that idea that it does hold you up, it supports you, the practice and even the repetition of ritual and the repetition of liturgy as something that does give you structure and support, that makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm. What was your impression then of the liturgy that you experienced here?
Well, I mean, here in particular, especially the first time ever having participated in a liturgy, even as a person sitting in a pew, so to speak, I was just absolutely blown away. St. Mark's really does a good job of, what is it? It's like emphasizing every aspect of the old ritual that Christians have been doing for literally a thousand years or more, mm-hmm. right? And so what's interesting is you have a great richness of the Christian tradition here, and you really can see it. And there's so many there's so much to be absorbed sort of through the symbolism and through what everybody's doing. I was just really almost overwhelmed the first time with just asking myself questions about, well, what are they doing? Why are they doing this? Is this important? Is that just, you know, because people have to, you know, you can't just teleport places, you know what I mean? Like, is it really important that we process? Like, I really appreciated the deacon coming into the middle of everybody to read the gospel. Like, all of these things were really, of course, it's Advent too, right?
So. Oh, yes.
Right, so.
So you were really seeing everything in everything stepped up a notch in terms of Advent and the preparation for Christmas too. I usually ask people when we do these conversations what their first impression of St. Mark's was, and it sounds like you had quite the impression.
Correct. I guess I would say that you know, the thing that I've really appreciated about St. Mark's is how welcoming everybody has been. I know that that's something that you'll hear a lot of people say, especially the folks that stay around, and I think that rings true for me too, you know.
Tell us a little bit about the different things that you do here.
I do a couple of different things, mostly having to do with sort of liturgical in the church things, but also having to do with hospitality, right? So I'm, like I said, I'm part of the St. Mark's Singers for the 9 o'clock choir. I just recently got recruited to do acolyting for 11 o'clock. I do lecturing for 11 o'clock. I usher for the 11 o'clock service. And once a month, at the beginning of the month, I'll help host, along with you and Earl and some other folks. Sue will do that too. The newcomers coffee, which is really rewarding. It's so cool being able to meet the newcomers as they come in the door, even if they don't stay, you know.
Sure.
Yeah.
Why is it important for you to do all that? I mean, you talked about the importance of music, but the readings and being an usher, being an acolyte, serving on the newcomers, the welcome committee. Why is that something that you want to do, you know, every week?
Well, I don't necessarily do it every week, but as many weeks.
Okay.
So I would say, though, so choir is the one is the one ministry that for me is sort of a personal thing, right? Like, I do it because you know, it's sort of a way for me to personally connect, so to speak. Mm-hmm. The other ministries I do. Partly because I didn't say no, but
that was your first mistake.
I know, right? But more, you know, like as I do them, it is a blessing, particularly ushering and the newcomers coffee. Partly because I am a newcomer to St. Mark's, and so the ability to make people feel welcome and comfortable in a cathedral. Is something that I have really found that I enjoy, partly because, you know, the fact of worshiping in such a huge structure like this is foreign to me because I'm used to worshiping in somebody's house. You know, the church that I was a part of was very sort of biblical in that way, and so they didn't believe in church buildings. And so the notion of, you know, there's a certain aspect where the building of St. Mark's can come off as a little bit cold, you know, compared to maybe other buildings. And so I feel like it's important to have people who are, you know, particularly welcoming and friendly up front to kind of offset that a little bit.
I know you've only been here, quote unquote, only been here 10 months. How do you think your time at St. Mark's has changed you?
I think it's changed me in one respect in that it's made me have a better opinion of Seattle.
That is not an answer I hear a lot.
Good. Well, you're right. Well, because, I mean, as it's said on the website, you know, St. Mark's is, or on the YouTube video or something, St. Mark's is one of the most progressive churches and one of the most progressive cities in. And where I come from, depending on what circles you run in, progressive could be profanity, you know. And so what's been really refreshing about St. Mark's is how it subverted some of my expectations with respect to, you know, the perhaps the stereotypical people you might expect to find in a, quote, progressive church, right? The welcoming that I've felt and that I've seen extended to other people, and the good people here have really been sort of nurturing to me, I suppose, in that regard, right? And helped me feel more welcome in what I consider to be a foreign city.
You've been living in Seattle how long?
About 2 years now.
That's an interesting perspective, that. In a way, you still feel that, in your words, it still feels like a foreign city. But through this church and through this community, it's helped to become home a little bit.
Correct. Yeah, to a large extent. I mean, there's been other forces with that at work as well. But, you know, it's been particularly helpful with a city that, you know, for me, my bias is to assume that everybody I meet is an atheist, right? Which I don't say is a necessarily bad thing, but mm-hmm. as somebody who identifies as Christian, that can sometimes get a little bit wearying, and so it's nice to know, no, there really are, like, Christian communities, and more to the point, there are Christian communities who aren't just, so to speak, hiding, you know,
right.
in sort of like, they're here and out. I mean, you can't ignore St. Mark's, it's in the middle, it's visible from I-5, right?
True. Yeah, I know I've had many, many of my own friends express surprise that the church I go to is the big box with the window that they see on I-5. Mm-hmm. And in a way, that connects to something that the cathedral is doing now. Well, it's been doing it for a while, but the 20s and 30s ministry, which is really, in my opinion, I think, taking off the events that we've got going on, the dinners at Dean Thomason House and Canon Daugherty's house, the Questioning Together events. Yeah, what you were saying, that there are people who see this big building and who have questions about what we do here and the role that we play here.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting you bring up the 20s and 30s group, because I haven't been super involved in explicit 20s and 30s, you know, in the 20s and 30s events. But I did really enjoy the first Questioning Together event that we had, which we heard from so many different people, so many different views on the question at hand, which for that one, which is, it was, you know, why does God let bad things happen, right? And just hearing everybody's approach was really interesting and refreshing to a certain degree, because there was a lot of nuance to be had, right? Like with many of these discussions, what we hear is sort of like standard talking points, right? Mm-hmm. And certainly there's nothing new under the sun, but There was very many different opinions and approaches discussed at that time, and that was really cool to know that there was a lot of people who were really thinking through a lot of these different questions and thinking about it deeply and sort of not afraid to think about it either, right?
Right.
Because there's a certain aspect of what I'm used to is a little bit, ooh, if you think about something a little bit too much, you might lose your faith because... you know, faith can be a very stringent thing for some folks.
One question that I usually ask the people I talk with is, if they have a particular memory of a time at St. Mark's that stands out to them, that reminds you of why this is a place you found and that continues to speak to you.
Yeah, for me, that time is going to be counterintuitively not Easter Vigil, although that does stick out, and it wasn't, I can't remember if there's a Christmas Vigil or not, but or even the New Year's Eucharist that we had. Actually, it was the 12 o'clock Ash Wednesday service, which I know a lot of people are like, Ash Wednesday, like, come on, man, like, what do you think? But there was something about being in the cathedral, and since the cathedral is usually so filled with joyous music of all kinds, and so filled with a lot of people, right? And usually it's sunny, and so the beautiful windows that had just gone up the first Sunday, the scaffolding just come down the first Sunday, so I've never known the cathedral windows with scaffolding, so lucky me. But, you know, and so it always had been this beautiful place, but you know, it was arranged, Providence arranged it such that particular Ash Wednesday at 12 o'clock, it was gray. And the gray coming in through the windows was almost the same color gray as the walls of the cathedral, the service was very bleak to a certain degree, which of course is Ash Wednesday, is not surprising. There was no music; it was almost totally silent except for us speaking. And then, in the procession up to getting the ash put on the forehead, mm-hmm. There was just something very profound and an almost mystical experience for me that first Ash Wednesday starting off Lent. And so that has really always stuck with me. It's probably a bit strange, but because of that, Lent is probably one of my favorite calendar things, you know.
I would dare say that's unique. Not too many people would point to Lent as something that stands out to them in such a positive way, mm-hmm. that you described. What was so appealing about that time and that experience that you remember that as a formative moment?
I mean, it was just the fact that for me personally, and I'm sure this is true for a lot of other folks, there's sort of an in the back of your head this nagging fear of death. And when I had gone through a phase of atheism, I hate to say atheist phase. Rather, when I had been atheist for a few years, death had been more present to me than it had previously when I was a Christian. And I was still concerned with death as a Christian, but it wasn't too concerning, right? Hmm. Because there's life after death, right? But, you know, coming back to, Christianity again, and having a church where, of course, with liturgy, there is a place for contemplating your own death and it being okay, because at the end of Lent there's Easter, right? But you can't have Easter without Lent.
True.
Right? And so there was something profound about it being okay to contemplate your own mortality, and again there being a ritual so that and I know that this is a little bit maybe cliche, but a ritual to ease that anxiety, right? I know that some people say religiously that religion is all about easing anxiety. I would disagree with that. But again, coming to a place where it's acknowledged that, yeah, from ashes you came and to ashes you will again return. And that being a communal thing is pretty profound to me, so.
And in a way, that connects to so many things that you've talked about today. Your love of ritual, your want of ritual, mm-hmm. to give you that foundation and that structure, and the importance of corporate worship, that acknowledging and confronting and accepting the inevitability of death is best done, I think, in a communal setting where we have the support of each other and where we can give support mm-hmm. as well, that kind of relationship. So it's fascinating that in that one experience of midday Ash Wednesday service, it spoke to many of the things that called you and started this journey here.
Mm-hmm. Yes. No, it's true. And I was fortunate to be in a position where I was able to attend that particular service.
Elliot Jacks, thank you so much for sharing this. I mean, you and I have known each other for quite some time now, a few months, and I much appreciate being able to sit down with you and to find out how this got started, why it's important for you, why this is something that calls you to continually give of yourself. And this has been, for me, a very enlightening time. Thank you very much for sharing that.
Thank you very much. It's as a newcomer and knowing that there are people who have been here for decades, it is a privilege and an honor to be here with you. So thank you.
Thanks for listening to our podcast. Our music was performed by Michael Kleinschmidt on the Flintrop organ at St. Mark's. Michael Pereira and Andrew Himes produced the podcast, and we hope you'll visit stmarks.org. So long.